Let me start by taking us to the Recording Industry of America website. So here we are, and this is the website of the organization that represents the recording industry and artists insofar as they're represented by the recording industry, although that's a complicated question. And you'll see there's a lot of guide for parents and teachers about downloading, how do you identify pirated product, how to report piracy if you want to turn in your boyfriend or whatever. Information for parents, places you can get music legally, and so on and so forth. The focus of the industry has, to an extraordinary degree, turned to copyright and the illegal use of copyrighted music. And I think if you ask them why, they would bring up they would bring up this chart here. So this is their chart. This is the recording industry chart of year-end shipment statistics from 97 to 2000 through 2007. And down the left, you can see our various formats: CDs, cassettes, LPs, vinyl singles, you know, DVDs, and so on. So clearly, you know, some of these formats have dropped essentially to zero. There's not a lot of sales of cassette tapes in the last few years. And the CDs, you see, starting in 97, increased 753, whatever, million units, 847, so on and so forth. They rose, and then around 2001, they started to decline. And there's so here are the decade scale changes in this column, percent change 2005 through 2006, and percent change 2006 through 2007 in the right hand column. And of course, some of these numbers will have declined simply because of they don't make record players anymore. It's hard to sell records. But the important numbers, I suppose, would be the bottom lines down here. What their total units and total value has changed, and they show here that there is a significant drop in the value of what's been recorded. Now, I can't vouch for what's been sold. I can't vouch for the accuracy of these statistics, where they get them from, whether they're in constant dollars or whatever it is. But I think this is their case, that there's a problem. Okay. And the prose goes on and talks about how there's a vast billions of dollars lost because of piracy. I got the MPA, the Motion Picture Association, is the same thing. That nice Batman thing, and then it's got all of this stuff over here. Movie thieves. Who are they? Who do they hurt? Get involved. Stop movie thieves. So the piracy, thievery language is everywhere. Okay, so what's the source of the movie and music piracy and thievery? Well, it is, of course, people like Jamie Thomas. I know it's Jamie Thomas. I actually don't know how you pronounce her name. Let's call her Jamie because that makes more sense to me. Just be a. And she's the woman who was the subject of a little sidebar in the book. Jamie Thomas is a Minnesota single mother of two who was found guilty of sharing 24 songs on Kazaa, which is a file sharing network, and was fined $9,250 per song for a total of $222,000. She was the only one whose argument with the RIAA actually made it all the way to a trial. Now, there were a number of others, like Tanya Anderson, who was the person in the first story, who fought it. And in the Tanya Anderson case, what happened was that when push came to shove and the recording industry was challenged in court to show their evidence, or were getting prepared to have to show their evidence for why she should be prosecuted, they didn't produce any and the case was thrown out. So this is one where apparently there was some kind of evidence and the thing actually went to trial. And she was held liable for these enormous damages. And this was challenged, and on appeal, the ruling was fairly recently. You can see this is October 16th, was thrown out. And the particular issue at stake was that whether simply having a song available on a file, on a peer-to-peer file sharing network, having the song on your shared folder on your computer and making it available for other people to download it, so being one of the peers that are involved in peer-to-peer, making it possible that someone could download files from your computer, whether that was sufficient to cause you to be considered guilty of actually sharing your music and be guilty of copyright infringement for that. And as the statement says down below, U.S. District Court Michael Davis threw out the verdict on the grounds that he originally misguided the jury by indicating that simply the act of making a copyrighted song available for sharing amounts to infringement. Now, so the state of the thing right now is that the recording industry is requesting that that their appeal of that, I don't want to get too wrapped up in the, you know, legal niceties, be allowed to be considered before he schedules a new trial. She still, as the way things go, has to stand trial. It was just a jury instruction that the judge supposedly got wrong. So let me bring up here. Oh no, I guess I've got it right there. What the recording industry's contention here is. This is actually a brief that was written by the Motion Picture Association, which has the same problems with, you know, movies that the recording industry has with music. So here's the here's what the motion picture industry said to the judge about why he was right the first time in saying, you know, if you just put the music there on your computer and it is connected to a file sharing network, Kazaa or something like that, you're guilty of infringement automatically, even if nobody can show that anybody actually took the music from you. The fundamental issue raised by jury instruction number 15, which was what the judge had originally said, that alone sufficed to make you guilty of copyright infringement for sharing music, is whether the Copyright Act renders such contact, the unauthorized making available of copyrighted works over a peer-to-peer network, unlawful, as that instruction states, or whether such conduct is unlawful only if actual distribution has been shown, which, as the MPAA understands it, means the copyright owner, the recording studio, must provide direct proof that specific individuals downloaded specific works the defendant made available. And they go on to say, this is quite a wonderful statement, it's often very difficult and in some cases impossible to provide such direct proof when confronting modern forms of copyright infringement, whether over peer-to-peer networks or otherwise. Understandably, copyright infringers typically do not keep records of infringement. Mandating that proof could thus have the pernicious effect of depriving copyright owners of a practical remedy of massive copyright infringement in many instances. But notice, there is a... it is an interesting argument, because the argument says that because specific transactions are so hard to track, that the intention to do something bad is sufficient even if it never happened, even if the thing that the copyright statute originally was literally meant to cover, which was, illegal copying, even if the copying didn't happen, the intention alone should suffice. And then there's a question of, what the standard is for determining what your intention was, which is a mental state, after all. There's something, whatever you think about this particular thing, there's something slightly discomforting about this, because here's the remedies. This is the copyright statute. The section that has to do with how much you have to pay. And it's good to review this, since it's relevant to the case of Mr. Tenenbaum. So this is what you owe if you are guilty of copyright infringement, before you get down to the sort of criminal sanctions, where you're actually trying to make money off it. This is just on the assumption that you're just doing the usual teenager thing of, sharing. This is actual damage or statutory damage, okay? So it's always statutory damage. These are the numbers that are written in here. Statutory damage, sum of not less than $750 or more than $30,000, as the court considers just. So the fine could be as high as $30,000 per clip, based now on a judgment of what your intention was, not on any proof that you actually did anything. And in a case where the copyright owner sustains the burden of proving and the court finds that the infringement was committed willfully, so it was not an accident somehow, that you actually really did intend, I actually don't know, given your intent standard, how to reconcile this term with what goes on in the first part, the court in its discretion may increase the award of statutory damages to a sum of not more than $150,000, with every song being a separate, a separate act of infringement. And then there's various other exceptions. Goes on that if the infringer was not aware and had no reason to believe that his or her acts constituted an infringement, the court in its discretion may reduce the award of statutory damages to a sum of not less than $200, so that would be the minimum, but it's on a sort of on a per song basis. So the stakes here are pretty high, actually, for these people, particularly if you get into a question of what the sort of intent was. And then I guess finally, just let me put up, just in case nobody, this website is mentioned in the, this is p2plawsuits.com. This is the website that you get to if you get one of these demand letters from the RIAA, where they say that they will be glad not to take you to court. Do you want to settle a case online? You say yes, and you go here and you type in the case number which they gave you in their letter, and then they enable you to pay by credit card $7,500 or whatever and let bygones be bygones. Anybody know anybody who's that's been through this thing that's actually got a case number? I don't have a case number to put in there. So almost everybody pays the money rather than, you know, going to court and trying to fight it, because just hiring a lawyer will quickly get you up above the typical number here.